Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Ian Lewins, one of the Children's Emergency Department consultants based in Derby in the UK. And it is my very, very great privilege today to be joined by Liz Crowe, who's an extremely experienced paediatric social worker based in Australia and an internationally renowned speaker on paediatric loss, grief, crisis and bereavement work. Good evening, Liz. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Ian.
Excellent. So you kind of reached out and we had a chat amongst the Bubbles team to talk about the Australian bushfires that are obviously very much in the news at the moment. From the outside looking in, is the whole of Australia on fire at the moment?
I think it probably looks like that in the media, and certainly a significant part of our country has been impacted. But, you know, all of the metropolitan and urban areas of Australia are thankfully at the moment are safe, and that while we have lost, you know, huge amounts of bushland and animal life, and we've certainly had significant human loss as well, the bulk of Australians remain safe. And while our hearts and thoughts are constantly with our fellow Australians who have been impacted, I think this is one of the big problems is that children are being exposed over and over again on the news, social media, listening to adults talk. And I think, like the rest of the world, there's lots of children in Australia who think that they're at imminent risk and danger.
To put this in context, I think from my perspective, very much looking out and in, I guess I'm aware that there have been sort of bushfires and these problems over the last few years. Is this year significantly different?
Oh, this is unprecedented for the world, never mind Australia. These fires have been raging now really since kind of October, November, and has gone on and on and on. And, you know, we've lost they're saying millions of animals. We've had, I think, over 25 human deaths. Whole towns have been wiped out. They're saying some of our bird life and wildlife may not ever recover from this. Like, this is unprecedented. Like, areas of Australia look like a war zone. They look like after Vietnam or Hiroshima, just completely wiped out. So this is unprecedented, not just for Australia, but I think for the entire world. So certainly don't want to undermine or underestimate the significant loss, damage, grief and destruction from these fires. But I guess when it comes to children, we need to be really careful about their level of exposure and their understanding. And, you know, we have adults around the world who have no clue about, you know, what is the extent of damage, or adults around Australia. So it's no wonder children are feeling, you know, frightened and concerned.
And I guess where you're based, is that something that you're kind of encountering a lot at the moment, sort of on a daily basis, worries from kids? Is that your sort of interest in this?
We're just hearing it everywhere, like, and everywhere you go. Like, I was very curious, even I have a very open relationship with my children, and my 15-year-old said to me last night, "Mama, we're at risk." And I think it's because the air quality in a lot of the major cities and around Australia has been impacted for a long time. Certainly Sydney itself as a city is not under direct threat of being attacked, you know, like being burned. Right. But the air quality in Sydney for weeks and weeks, you know, people have to wear masks, you wake up, the whole city is in a thick haze of smoke. And so, of course, children, like adults, are concerned and frightened. And I guess I just kept getting asked, you know, will we do a podcast? Are we going to put out some information? And I thought, you know, people keep asking me, it's slowly starting to pop up in in the social media, you know, how to talk to children. I just think it's a really important issue. And it's not just around bushfires. I think what we're going to talk about today is how do you talk to children about any difficult conversation or any, you know, global event or significant trauma that's going on in the community. These are skills that will be transferable.
Yeah. So I've got three kids of varying ages, from the youngest of six to up to 14. And, you know, there are difficult topics around, they often come up over the dinner table, breakfast table, and trying to manage that for different ages is incredibly challenging, particularly when, you know, the older few are very aware of things like social media and what's popping up. And if you look at, you know, for the bushfires on social media and looking at the images that are coming back from the sort of the firefighters, they're unbelievable. They're incredible.
Oh, so, like, and this is what I keep saying to people, you know, this is not a mental health reaction. You know, the children feeling anxious, feeling concerned, being tearful about what they're seeing, this is not a mental health concern. This is not something we need to be worried about the children, because the adults are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Emotions are normal. It is normal for children to have reactions to things. We don't want to raise children who have no reactions to significant events, just like we would expect children to laugh and be really joyful around, you know, Christmas and festivals and fun things that are happening on the media, you know, when they're watching videos of dogs and cats doing funny things and finding it funny. They're going to have these reactions to things like the bushfires because they're also little humans, exactly like adults. They experience emotions exactly like adults. The problem is that they can't process them, understand them. They don't always have the language or the reflection skills in the ways that adults do. Yeah. And so that's what we need to be mindful of.
And I guess one of the key questions when you've got any sort of major event like this is trying to find the best approach to sort of, are you very open about these? Do you actively share these things? Or do you, I guess sometimes as a parent, you want to hide them away from kids? And what's the best sort of balance towards this?
Well, look, I just don't think there's any hiding away from children anymore. I think parents have always been a bit delusional and struggled around how to talk to children around difficult conversations anyway. But as I always say, you know, you start whispering and your children adopt bionic hearing. You know, you can stand next to a child and ask them to come to the dinner table. They don't come. But if you're, you know, half a kilometre away and you stub your toe and you swear, they'll hear you. So as soon as children pick up on any kind of nuanced change in their parents' or their carers' behaviour, language, tone, they hone into that. And so that, you know, even like babies, we know, pick up on the emotions of what's going on in the house. So the more that we give kids information and share what the concerns are, the less chance they are to be confused that they're to blame or that there's a problem that cannot be solved as a family. And, you know, unfortunately, I work with children who have siblings who are dying, you know, weekly, we see that.
Yeah.
And of course, every parent wants to protect their child from that grief. Every parent wants to protect, you know, like give their child the best possible start they can in life. But if this is happening in your family, if this is happening in your community or your country, if this is significantly happening and there's, you know, media exposure across the world, there is no protecting children from that. You know, you walk into the grocery store today, you know, it's on the front page of the media, it's on every time you click on the computer, it's the front screen showing you what's happening with the bushfires, it's on all the news, everywhere you go people are talking about it, and nearly every major city in Australia has been blanketed in smoke. Sydney, that's been an ongoing issue. You know, you can't hide that from children. And so when children don't have the facts, when children are excluded from the knowledge or the shared understanding of adults, the only thing they can do is make it up. You know, as an adult, you walk into the lunchroom in the hospital and everyone stops talking, you immediately think, they're talking about me.
Yeah.
This is to do with me. It's the same thing with kids, but their anxiety about what that is and what that involves is escalated, their imagination runs wild, and what we actually do or find is that we are increasing their distress rather than decreasing their distress.
Yeah. I think one of the things, you know, that I say to medical students who are coming to do a pediatric placement with me who've not really been exposed to pediatric patients before is that kids are not stupid, and they know when you're lying to them or not being completely honest, and they don't trust you. And as you say, they often make things potentially worse in their heads. And I guess it's difficult, isn't it? Because yes, we need to be open. Yes, we need to be honest. But does there come a point where there's too much information potentially?
So I think there's never really a point where parents can. That's not true. I'll change my answer to that. I don't think that we need to shove everything in their faces and down their throats. Like, kids still have a right to be kids. And you spoke developmentally before about, you know, how do you kind of break that up? I think you aim to give information, standardized information based at your youngest child, and then you respond to questions from the older children. At the moment, I think it's really important because the exposure is so huge in Australia and I believe worldwide, to say to the children, you know, these are the areas of Australia that are on fire and this is where we live. And for some families, they're still living with the risk. And if you are living with the risk, you should definitely say to your children, we're living with risk and this is our safety plan. If the fire comes closer, this is how we will know. You know, the police will come and notify us, or we will get a text message from the council on our phone, and this is what we're going to take. And anything that's precious to you, this is a box, you put it in here, it's coming with us. And this is how we will take the cat. And this is, you know, like to give them information so that there's parameters around it. For families who aren't at risk at all, but whose children are being exposed, I think you try to limit that. You give them information and say, these are the areas that are on fire. This is where we live. This is how we know we're not under any risk. If we became under risk, you know, this is how it would change. Again, this would be our safety plan. One of the things that I think kids in Australia in particular, but certainly this may be a global problem, is all of what's happening with the animals. You know, like, we're being bombarded with pictures of people saving kangaroos and koalas and injured animals and carcasses of animals and animals having to be euthanized. And children can find that hugely distressing, as can adults. And I think what we need to say is, yes, sadly, you know, we have lost a lot of wildlife and a lot of bird life, and a lot of our great country has been hugely damaged. This is how the earth will recover. This is how, when animals are injured, there's a lot of vets doing like remarkable work at the moment, euthanizing, healing, setting up, you know, clinics and stuff for burnt animals, you know, to give them some parameters. And then once they have that information, move on. Talk about something else, get them away from it. They don't have to sit with it. It's not healthy for adults to do that. Certainly not healthy for children.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what are we going to say if, as you say, houses and pets and belongings are destroyed? And are you sort of finding in conversations that you're having that it does seem to be the pets that are the focus, or is it sort of possessions or people or what sort of things?
Well, I personally haven't come directly in contact with families who have lost everything. I mean, I think certainly for families who have lost anything, there's no minimising or hiding that from children. You know, they're going to have to say, like, we have lost all these things. You're going to see mum and dad cry a lot. You're going to see our friends and our neighbours crying. That's because people are very sad about what's happened. This is what's going to happen next. This is where we're going to live. This is how, you know, there's a thing called insurance and people are making donations. We may not go back to where we used to live. You know, these are things. But providing a routine and a structure and assurance about what's going to happen next is very important. For families who haven't been directly contacted, just to let kids know this is what happens. you know, there are children out there who have lost their whole community, who don't know where they're going to live, don't know where their neighbours, and for some communities it may be too devastating to return. For other communities, the rebuild will be, you know, take a very, very, like, years to return to any sort of sense of normal. But I think just like adults, you know, they need parameters. They need when you're in crisis, you need to break things up into steps, right? This is where we're going to sleep tonight. This is what's going to happen next. So for children who are safe but who are saying, you know, well, what's going to happen to those? Pets have been, you know, pets and animals have been a big thing on the media. Yeah. To provide assurance that, there are lots of people working day and night tirelessly to find the injured animals. The animals that can't be saved are being, you know, euthanized as swiftly and as gently as possible. Maybe you'll need to say that. Maybe you won't. I think be guided by what sort of questions you're asking. I mean, you wouldn't say that to a four-year-old who had no clue that that could happen. You could just say the vets are coming and they're going to look after the animals. For the older kids, it would be fine to say that they're going to be euthanized and that that happens swiftly and that's shocking, but that's much better than letting an animal suffer. So it really depends. You can't sort of say, you know, what's the chronological age that you would talk to children about this, this, and this? Because, you know, you might have a four-year-old who say, what happens if there's a koala who can't be cured? And then you're going to have to answer that properly. You might have a 14-year-old who says, but, you know, when the vets get there, surely they'll be saved. And you could say, yeah, look, the animals are being taken care of. Yeah. So it's you need to be guided by what your children are asking, but lying to them, being, you know, providing false securities and false hopes, that doesn't make kids feel safe because they very much can see what the reality of what's going on. And, fire is hugely frightening.
Yeah. And I think that the thing I'm sort of hearing a lot of through this is having a plan, breaking it down into little bits and having a plan for each bit is that sort of thing that provides a bit of psychological safety, I guess, for these kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, parents do need to think about this before the questions come up. If parents out there aren't sure how much their kids know or whatever, tune into them, listen to what their conversations are, listen to if it's coming up in their play. If they're finding that their children are waking more frequently at night, having night terrors, any of those things, you know, ask them what it's about and then provide assurance around that. There may be some children who just need stronger attachments at the moment, a lot more reassurance, you know, wanting, you know, if they're in the firing line or if there's a lot of smoke around, you know, playing with your kids or talking to them more, staying with them, putting on a nightlight, anything that offers assurance. But I think that whole thing about having a plan about what to say when the questions come up is good. I think the other thing is parents really work up in their minds, you know, like, oh, I have to have this big serious conversation. I'm going to say this, they're going to say that. And then they interrupt children while they're watching their favorite TV show or when a child is tired or when a child is hungry. And, of course, it just doesn't work. And that's not because the child's got mental health problems. That's because, you know, don't have a serious conversation with anyone when they're hungry. Don't have a serious conversation with anyone when they're tired. That includes adults. So I think have a plan, and for those people who are potentially at risk or for those people who've already been impacted, you know, break it down into small chunks about what is the plan each day or what is the plan should we become under risk and have to evacuate.
Yeah. I guess one of the real challenges at the moment is kind of managing uncertainty, and I'm sure you've come across that multiple times in your work of – we're not quite sure what's going to happen next. I mean, my understanding is that, you know, the fires are still going and it doesn't look like they're stopping anytime soon.
And I guess it just keeps coming back to that plan. You know, like if you've got uncertainty and it doesn't matter if it's a fire or a flood or an earthquake or, you know, volcanoes, any of those things, it doesn't matter if there's talk about separation or domestic violence. If you're able to say to a child, this is the plan. This is how we would know when we have to move. This is what we would take with them. Here's a little bag and you're allowed to, you know, I grew up where we had cyclones And when a cyclone was coming, you know, we had several nights when I was a child that we all had to bunker down in a bathroom, you know, four kids and our parents in this tiny bathroom. And the bathtub was always filled with water in case, you know, we lost water or electricity. Yep. You'd hear the wind raging. You know, we were allowed to take two precious things with us. And it was a really big thing as a child to choose what were those two precious things. But that was the rules and we knew that and we would take it in with us. And we knew that if something happened to the house, this would be the next step. And we knew, you know, this is our parents would often say to us, we will be in the bathroom for at least 10 hours or we're going to be in there for the night. So you can take two toys and a pillow. And just even those sorts of things, it provides a sense of someone is in control, someone is keeping me safe, and, you know, where to go from here. I mean, the images, I don't know if you've seen them, Ian, of like a whole community on a beach with this fire raging. You know, kids have been exposed to that. As an adult, as a counsellor who deals with terrible tragedy, crisis and adversity every week, I was brought to tears by that. We have to expect that children, you know, will react to that. And, you know, I don't think we need to go into, you know, how do you look after the children who are on that beach, because they're such a specialised, you know, such a small proportion, and there'll be specialised counsellors going in and looking after those kids. But if your kids are saying, you know, what happened to them on the beach, you can say, you know, they would have been frightened, but people came in boats and they looked after them and they brought them water and this is how they got them out and this is where they took them. And, you know, something like $80 million has been raised so far. So to say to kids, like, lots of money has been, you know, raised so far and this is how we're going to invest it and these are the sorts of things we're going. Like, I'm talking to my children that, you know, I plan in the next year or so to go to Kangaroo Island, which is an island of South Australia that's been hugely devastated, so that we can go back and contribute to their community by tourism and, you know, just saying, this is what we're going to do in the short term, this is what we're going to do in the medium term, this is what we're going to do in the long term. Because I think what we want to also teach children is you don't just pay attention to what's the biggest noise in media at the time. Mm. This is going to be an ongoing issue for our country for a very, very long time. And as a community, we can't afford to forget them. And they're good values to teach your children going into the future, that we always remember people who have had significant loss. Just like we march on Anzac Day when we remember people from World War I and World War II and Vietnam and all the subsequent wars that Australia's been involved in. You know, these are the sorts of things that we have to remember both now and into the future.
Absolutely. One thing I just want to pick up on that I thought was interesting is you mentioned a couple of times the sort of saying, this is not a mental health problem, these reactions, these responses, these behaviours. Do you say that because that there's potentially a push to try and label the responses as mental health problems increasingly, do you think?
That look, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist and I'm not a medical doctor, I'm a social worker. It really concerns me how quickly children and adults get a mental health label. You know, this is depression, this is anxiety. Actually, to be really worried if you're living in a bushfire area, that's not an, you know, that anxiety is real.
Yeah.
We know what it's about. It's reactionary. You know, it frightens me. You know, we have children die in our unit and within a week parents are being, you know, diagnosed with depression or kids are being diagnosed with depression. That's grief. It's sadness. Grief and sadness can develop long-term into depression. You know, and in bereavement and stuff, those things can be linked, but not in the acute phases. You know, you can't have post-traumatic stress disorder for 4 to 6 weeks. So if someone has been exposed to the fire and have had to run and their kids and themselves feel very heightened and stuff, they're in an acute critical stress response. That's a normal response to a completely abnormal, you know, adverse trauma. And so I'm really keen for us to normalize kids' distress, normalize our own distress when something distressing has happened. You know, like, when someone is anxious about something because it's a real threat, that's actually a protective thing. It's not a mental health concern. You know, if there's a fire and I feel very anxious about being impacted, that my house burning down, that's a healthy reaction. It means I'm going to run. I'm going to be alert to it. It doesn't mean that there's a problem. And so that's why, you know, when kids now are being exposed to all this and are worried about koalas and are worried about other children and worried about their school, you know, you need to say, you know, that's really normal. Of course you're worried. These are terrible, terrible things that are happening. But the kids who aren't affected, they're not traumatized. They're just impacted by what they're seeing. So I think it's important. Our language is important. And it concerns me how quickly we go to the extremes of things instead of just saying, they were worried, they were frightened, they were impacted. We say straight away they're traumatized, and they're not traumatized. They're going to recover from what's happened, you know, especially kids who haven't actually been directly involved.
Yeah. Last question then, Liz. One of the things I guess I'm interested in also was that with the job you do, how do you protect yourself? So how do we as parents or health professionals, you know, we've talked about being honest with parameters. We've talked about having plans to try and help and protect our children. How do you protect yourself?
Well, if you're a parent, I also, you know, I don't think it's good just before you go to bed at night to watch YouTube clip after clip after clip of the bushfires.
No.
You know, that's not going to be a peaceful, restful way to go off to sleep. So I think it's about, you know, being very grateful, first of all. Like I feel very blessed that I'm in Australia and I have neither my family or my close friends, no one's been directly impacted. So I'm grateful for that, and I feel now I have a responsibility to help those that have been. So I think about being grateful for the things that we have, to do something active for those who have been impacted so that we can feel part of being, you know, I want to be an Australian. I want to step up and help my fellow Australians, making financial contributions, doing podcasts, whatever it is, you know, making food or whatever it is that you can do to look after yourself. I think that, you know, we just live in such a society where busyness is so rewarded. Being exhausted and tired and frantically busy all the time is the new popularity. I think slow down. Ask yourself what's important. When things like this are happening, it's really a time of reflection, I think, where you can say, what is it important? And in 2020, who would I like to be as a person? Who would I like to be as a parent, as a friend, as a sibling, as a daughter or son? And to really invest in those things. And, you know, so often the only New Year's resolutions you hear about people's body image. You know, I'm going to be super fit. I'm going to be thin this year. Instead of being that, say, how are you going to honour yourself? How are you going to look after yourself? What would be important? I say to people, don't talk about exercise. Talking about movement in relation to eating. You eat a big burger, go for an extra long walk. Yeah. You know, have a little dance in the kitchen. Just get yourself moving. I think be careful of our language that we use to ourselves, and be careful of our language we use with our children. And self-care is really important, but part of that is also reminding yourself that we're part of a community and keeping a broader perspective, because when any of us become too, you know, over-reflective, I was saying today, you know, if you say to someone, don't think of a polar bear,
yeah.
First thing that happens is everyone thinks of a polar bear. If you go to bed every day and you think, what would it be like if this was my family, you know, what can I do? I'm powerless. Climate, you know, I think there's an existential crisis to the bushfires around climate change and what is our responsibility. You know, if you get caught in that cycle, you build it in your mind. Whereas if you think, these are the things that I can do, these are the things within the realm of my power, these are the things outside the realm of my power, I'm going to really focus on the things that are within the realm of my power, and that life is good and optimistic. And, you know, I did a podcast with some vets today, and I was saying, you know, while the bushfires are terrible, if you had to think about something in relation to it that's good, and it's still, you know, I wish we didn't have the bushfires, but Australia has come together as a community. The world is having this huge outpouring of emotion and well-being and goodness and donations. That's a good thing to know, that actually humanity is still at its core very positive, very good, and we don't need to be hopeless about that, and we can share that optimism with our children.
Absolutely. Liz, I think that there's so much that people will take away in there, and I think that positivity, that optimism is so important. So I just want to thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today and wishing you all the best.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Ian.